Welcome to the Femi Pod. These conversations are for women runners that go beyond running. Brought to you by your Femi founders, Lydia O'Donnell and Esther Kewen. Today on the podcast, we're absolutely thrilled to be joined by someone who wears many hats, Olympian, elite athlete, advocate, and the founder of the Female Athlete Project, Chloe Dalton. From representing Australia in basketball, rugby sevens, and Aussie rules, to using her platform to elevate the stories of women in sport, Chloe is a true force for change. Her mission? To ensure female athletes get the recognition, visibility, and respect they deserve. We're diving into her journey across the three elite sports, winning an Olympic gold medal, what drove her to start the Female Athlete Project, and how she's pushing greater equity in sport from grassroots to the global stage. Chloe is proof that it's possible to break boundaries and build something powerful beyond the game, and we're excited to speak to Chloe about the journey she's been on to get here. Welcome to the Femi Pod, Chloe. How are you?
I'm really good, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to having a chat today.
So excited to chat to you too. Yeah, I had a listen to your podcast together, Chloe and Liz, recently, so it's cool to flip the script and get you on Femi as well. So excited to chat. But yeah, I'd be interested to hear about young Chloe and what role sport played for you in your life as you were growing up.
Yeah, so I grew up on the Northern Beaches in Sydney, and sport was a huge part of our life growing up. Mum and dad, like when they were young, were really, really active. So I think sport was kind of always going to be a big thing for us. I was always out in the backyard, particularly with my older brother, Mike. We were so competitive in the backyard, just playing every single sport under the sun, trying to beat one another. And then in terms of organized sport, I did like nippers at the beach, t-ball, touch footy, athletics, cross country. I did a whole lot of different sports, and just I don't even really know what it was about it. It was almost like that there was no question that sport was kind of always going to be a huge part of my life.
Oh, I love that. So many different sports. Literally everything under the sun.
Yeah.
So it's been so interesting looking into your background, Chloe, and understanding like how incredible you are at so many different sports, and you're so incredibly humble about it as well. I remember when we spoke on the Female Athlete Project, I was speaking about my friend Gemma, who was and still is an amazing athlete across so many different sports, and little did I know you were in very similar shoes, playing at an elite level across basketball, rugby sevens, and AFLW. Do you kind of give that credit to your brother, or like where does that kind of like skill in so many different sports come from?
I don't know if I want to give him the credit. I feel like it would make his head too big if I gave him that credit, but I do think it was a very big part of, like, I reckon just how active we were as kids and how much we had like a footy in our hands. I reckon that has absolutely like shaped the athlete that I've become as an adult. I think a huge part of it was the Sydney Olympics, to be honest. I was 7 when the Sydney Olympics were on, and it was the Cathy Freeman moment for me, which is the same for a lot of young Aussie kids. Like just the way that she walked out onto the track and had the weight of a whole country on her shoulders, and like had a custom-made Nike bodysuit that she zipped up and pulled the hood on. And just, I was just so blown away as a little kid that she was actually able to win that Olympic gold medal. And so I just decided as a kid I wanted to win my very own Olympic gold medal, and I didn't know how I was going to get there or what on earth it was going to look like. But I think because I kind of had this very firm dream and ambition to do that, I kind of just like throughout that journey was just working out how to get there in a way.
Yeah, that's so interesting. It's funny because I feel like a lot of people would have had the moment with Cathy Freeman and how incredible she was and still is. And a lot of young kids would have looked at her and been like, I want to win an Olympic gold, but very little actually go on to win an Olympic gold medal. So you went from playing basketball and then into rugby sevens, is that right?
Yeah, so I was playing in the WNBL with the Sydney Uni Flames, and I was kind of like, okay, I'm a step closer to my goal. I wanted to play for the Opals. Like, I loved like Lauren Jackson and Penny Taylor and Erin Phillips and all these players. And I was like, I really want to represent the Opals at the Olympics. But when I got to the WNBL, I was a real bench warmer. I didn't get a lot of minutes. If we were winning by like 40 points or losing by 40 points, I would get on for like less than 2 minutes at the end of the game. And I was so anxious that I almost didn't contribute anything at all because I was so stressed about the level of pressure for this tiny window of time that I had. So I just don't think that the combination of those things were great for me as an athlete. Anyway, I had to be a bit realistic about the fact that I probably wasn't going to be playing for the Opals anytime soon if I was warming the bench in the WNBL. And so I went onto Google and I typed in list of Olympic sports and had a look at a few different options and saw that rugby sevens was going to be in the Olympics for the very first time in Rio in 2016. And I'd grown up in a rugby family, like dad played, both my brothers played. It was like a really core part of my childhood going to rugby every Saturday afternoon to watch the boys. But I just had never really known that girls and women could play at the highest level. So to see that was going to happen in 2016, I wanted to be a part of it.
Mm. What was that kind of reinvention like for you mentally? Was it hard to kind of go from seeing yourself as an athlete in one sport to then just going to another? Or it kind of feels like you had this innate belief that you could just do it?
Yeah, it was. I still like so clearly remember that feeling of when I had the conversation with my basketball coach to tell her that I was quitting and that I was kind of done. And I just like literally threw everything at this rugby dream. And I just remember like after I had that conversation with her and I was walking out towards my car, like I was like sobbing and I sat in the car and I was like, what have I done? Like I've worked, like, I mean, I think I was 19 years old at the time, but I'd worked such a huge part of my life up until that point on this dream of basketball. And I loved the sport and I loved the relationships with people I had in the sport. And I was like, oh my God, what have I done? Like, have I just like literally thrown that away for something that may never come to pass? But I think once I started to train and learn the game of rugby, because I knew the game really well, but I'd never played it. So like, something like tackling and forming a ruck are the most foreign things. Like you could watch it 1,000 times, but to actually do those movements for someone who's never done it felt so bizarre to me. So just like picking up skills like that took me a while to actually feel comfortable in doing. But yeah, I think the thing was like, I just am very stubborn in knowing that I don't like not being good at things. So I think I just like had this really, really firm belief in knowing that I wasn't going to let myself be mediocre at it. Like I just knew that I was going to do whatever it took to put myself in the very best position to make that team and hopefully get on the plane to head over to Rio.
So cool. I love that attitude of like, yeah, you had a big goal and your big goal was to like win an Olympic gold medal and you're like realistic in your path to get there. I think that's really cool where you looked on the internet and you were like, what sport is actually going to be at the Olympics that I can go and make it? Because I think, I don't know, like, yeah, you can be good at so many different things. And if that's your big goal, like there's so many different paths to get there, which I think is really inspiring. But I would love to hear like your journey to get into that Olympic team and then also to win like a gold medal. Like, what was that like?
Yeah, the journey was fast in a way. So I reckon it was 2013 that I did that Google search. So I gave myself like 2.5-3 years max to get on the plane to go to Rio. And I started with my local club team, where we went down to the beach down at Narrabeen and like learned how to tackle on the sand and then kind of worked my way up, and not too long after was selected for the state team to play at nationals. And I went to this national tournament for sevens in Canberra and I was playing for New South Wales, and I was up against Queensland. I think we were up against Queensland in the final, and I kind of got thrown out on the wing because I was still quite new to the game and they were just like, just stay out there and try your best. And I literally was up against some of the best players in the world from the Aussie team. So Charlotte Kaslick and Emily Cherry, who were Charlotte's still playing now. She's been to 3 Olympics, I think. Emily Cherry's retired, but she is like one of the best rugby sevens players you could see besides some of the New Zealand girls. They also need to get some credit there. But they literally ran circles around me. And I was like, oh my goodness. And this car ride home with my dad. I don't know if we actually said it out loud, but I think it was like, right, this might not work out as well as what we had hoped it would. But yeah, a few days later, I got a call from the Aussie coach, and they'd been watching the Nationals and they saw something in me, and they invited me down to come and do a training camp at the Aussie program down at the Narrabeen Academy of Sport. And from there, I kind of went to a few different camps, and not long after that was actually invited to train full time with the squad. And then, yeah, kind of was just able to, after about 6 months or so, I think I made my debut on the World Series, and I was just able to kind of find a way in through my kicking, which was kind of a funny thing. At the time, there were a couple of girls who were kicking, but they needed a consistent kicker for, because sevens is like a drop kick to restart the game, and also for conversions, it's a drop kick. And I just had like always kicked as a little kid. Like I, when it was halftime at my brother's games down at Rat Park, when I was going to watch them, I'd always run out and like find a kicking tee and a footy and just always kick. I'd always just loved it. And so no one had ever really taught me how to do it properly, but it was kind of my point of difference, I guess, that I kind of used to find a way into the side. And so it meant I started to get to play decent minutes, and it like allowed me a chance to build up my other skills at the same time. And yeah, from there, I kind of just cemented my spot in the starting seven, and we won the World Series in the lead up to Rio. And then fast forwarding through the whole story, we were over in the Olympics, won our quarterfinal, won our semifinal, were up against New Zealand in that final. And the games were 20 minutes back then. So usually it's 7 minute halves, 14 minutes total. But back then they used to play the finals 10 minutes each half, which doesn't sound that much more, but it was hell. Like that extra time was just the hard. Like I remember at the end of that match, Ruby Tui like fended me, and I think I like ended up just on the ground, and I was just like crawling trying to stand up again. Like it was the most exhausting thing I've ever done. But when the siren sounded, we'd won 24-17. And my favorite moment out of all of it will be like we stood arm in arm with my teammates, and we ran towards the stadium, and all my favorite people were in the stands, mum and dad, my brothers, cousins, aunties and uncles, some of my closest friends. And they'd all traveled over to be there for that. And there's this really cool photo that I have, like I love, I have them side by side, and it's my family at Canberra National Cross Country when I was 12 years old. And then fast forward like, I don't know, 12, 13 years to Rio, it was the exact same group of people who were there supporting me for that gold medal. And it was just like, it was the most special thing to share that moment with them. And like, obviously sharing it with my teammates was like, no one else can ever really understand what it's like to go through that journey and the brutal nature of rugby sevens. Like sharing that with them was really special. But I think your like circle of people are the ones who know what it's like when you actually go through the hardships of injury and doubting yourself and all of those things. So when they get to celebrate those really beautiful moments with you, like that to me will forever stay in my mind. Like it was just so special to share that with them.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like your family are such a supportive family to get around you throughout your athletic career, from like being there in the depths of like, is this going to be the right path? Like, you know, assessing where you're at on the journey and wanting to kind of guide you into the right sport, from like that kind of advice from your dad to your mum being so supportive. Like we've seen that firsthand. Your mum is so special, and shout out to Penny for being such a supporter of Femi as well. But it's amazing to kind of hear your story around how they've supported you to get to where you are today as well. And in terms of like support, it's been really incredible to see over the last few years with this rise of women's sport, how much support there is between competitors as well. And only recently I saw Ilona Maher and her and the Black Ferns back in New Zealand getting around each other and actually creating content together and supporting each other, even though they are competitors. What was that like for you when you were playing rugby sevens and even going into AFLW? Did you feel that support amongst the players, even if you were playing against each other?
You know what? I reckon that's actually been a real shift that I've noticed only more recently. It's something that I almost feel a little bit sad about, that there was kind of this mentality that we had as a group that was kind of like we had to be like really tough on the field and tough off it as well. And so in the early part of my sevens career, like we would stay in the same hotels as every other team. Like, you all put, every single team is put in the same hotel. You have the same like dining area. So you literally see every single other opposition at mealtime. And we'd always like say hello and things like that. But it's something that I kind of regretted that we didn't really like lean into those relationships, because I think it's like a really special thing that you get to share with opponents. And towards the back end of my sevens career, that was definitely something that shifted. And we had really great relationships with the Irish team in particular as well. Like, we played a tournament over in Europe and like had an amazing night out at the pub with the Irish girls, as you would expect. But kind of, it was something that I really wish we had leaned into earlier, but I loved seeing that content. I saw Alona did a similar thing with the Wallaroos when they were playing here in Canberra, and that reel that she did with Portia, where it was like that thing about when you think Portia's retired and then she comes back in and then scored 7 tries against them. Holy, that was insane. She's such a beast.
She used to be a sprinter back in the day in my athletics club, and I was like a distance runner. Oh. So we've known each other for many years, and like, yeah, just seeing her become this like absolute weapon in rugby sevens and rugby just beyond is like, oh, honestly, so inspiring. But yeah, I love that too. It was so funny. I feel like that shift has been, I don't know, like, women's sport has become so much more popular and it's growing like every single day, which it should be, and like finally kind of getting that recognition. Like, we're still not there yet, but like there's a massive change, and like, I don't know, women in sport are different to men in sport, right? Like, men in sport are super duper, well, I imagine they are really hyper competitive, and maybe like back then we weren't like, I guess, owning sport as much as we are now and like really stepping into what it means to be like a woman athlete. And I think with all this like support coming you know, for women's sport now, like, we're stepping into this in our really authentic way. And maybe that's kind of what contributed to the fact that it felt like a little bit more competitive back then, whereas now it's like, damn, like, we all have a space here. We're all doing so well. Women's sport is on the rise, and like, we're all here for it. Do you think that is like part of it?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think a lot of the time in women's sport, when it's particularly in its like early phases of a competition or an organization or something like that, like you said, I feel like people almost like copy and paste, like, this is what the men have always done, so let's just do the same for the women. Like, an example is like in AFLW, for years we were wearing white shorts when we play away games, because it's like quite a traditional thing. Like, when you're the home team, you get to wear your color shorts, and when you're the away team, you wear white shorts. I think it stems back to when it was the, like, obviously men's footy, and it was black and white on television. It helped people determine who was on which team. I think that was kind of part of it. But for so long, they just had it like that because that's how the men had always done it, until people started to raise concerns around period anxiety and things like that. And then they finally changed it. And it's like, why did you not just change it when you started the league in the first place? But I think what I've loved about the evolution of women's sport is that concept, like you touched on, of like, it is different. We are different athletes. We are different people. And we, Bez and I on the podcast all the time, talk about the phrase, a rising tide lifts all boats. And we just did actually a merch launch about it because we just love it so much. And I think it, for us, it really encompasses what women's sport is about. I think it's this concept of community. It's about when one person wins, the whole of women's sport wins. It's this collective of people. And I know I've chatted to Lids about it. I can't remember if we spoke about it on the TFAT podcast or just in person. When we had the International Women's Day event with Nike that we ran together, when I actually met a lot of the Femi community, we were like running late because my partner was bringing our baby boy and his nap time went over. And anyway, they were running late. So I was walking with the group. We were part of the walking group, not the running group. And they were taking so long, Riley and Fred were taking so long to catch up with us, but the Femi group just kept stopping at every traffic light and just waiting for us. And it, to me, it was just like a really special moment of like how important that sense of community was, about kind of everyone being part of it. Anyway, that's just a random example, but just love what you guys do.
I love the new merch, and I love that saying as well, like, rising tides lifts all boats, because right now, across the board for women, not just in sport, but in so many different industries, we're starting to realize that in order to make change and true change that is going to make change forever, we all need to help each other to get there. Like, we can't do this on our own. And I really just love seeing the amount of women supporting each other across different businesses and communities and different sports. And like, we all know in the back of our minds, we're doing this because we can't do it alone. And if we can help drive change, then we need to do that together and whatever it takes, you know. And I think that's epic. So I really love your merch and I really love that saying. I actually hadn't heard it until I saw it on the merch and I was like, damn, that's so relevant and so true. So I need to get one of those t-shirts and wear every
accent. I'm going to send you guys some merch. I'll get on that.
So relevant. But as a female athlete across all three sports, really, that you played, basketball, rugby sevens, AFLW, they all historically started with men, not like something, say, like I did ballet. Looking back on your journey as a female athlete in those sports, what was the most challenging time for you in a male-dominated industry?
Yeah, it's probably, I'd say it's hard to pick the most challenging time. One of the first things that comes to mind is when I was playing basketball, and payment back then for the WNBL, even for like the top tier players, was pretty shocking, to be honest. I was obviously like one of the young rookies coming in. And so I think I was, because it was affiliated with the university, I was on a scholarship that pretty much paid the cost of my petrol to and from training and not a lot more than that. And I was renting in a share house at the time so I could be closer to training. And I was studying physiotherapy at Sydney Uni. And I had to work at a gym in the city. And I would do the 5 a.m. shift, and I'm not good at mornings. I feel like run club people are good at mornings. Me, I'm not good at mornings. I'm a lot better now that I've got a baby. I've been forced into it. But it was a brutal time. And I'd work that 5 a.m. shift till 2 p.m., then go straight to training that afternoon, and then like go home, have some cheap dinner, go to bed, wake up super early, drive out to university in the morning and literally sleep under the chairs at uni and have some amazing friends who just passed me their notes and things from lectures and whatnot. And mum came over one day and she like looked in our fridge and she was like, where is your food? Like, you're an elite athlete. Like, what are you doing? And I was like, I can't afford it, mum. Like, we had like some frozen vegetables and like these dodgy, like the $2 like bassa fillets, the frozen fish fillets, like that was literally what we'd eat. It was a grim time, and as many uni students do, right? But mum just like literally took me down the road and like bought me food and filled up the fridge and the cupboard, which I was so appreciative of. But it was kind of a moment of like the reality of where female sport was at that point in time, like that I was playing in the top league in Australia and just like scraping to even like eat nutritional food to be fueling my body to be an elite athlete.
Oh, that is just, it's pretty sad to hear. And I know that there are still a lot of elite athletes in the top level that are still dealing with this and don't have the support, but totally relate to you, you know, when I was running at a top level, like it's really hard to get support. And just again, kudos to your mum for coming round and like hooking it up when you need it the most. But like, yeah, it's just crazy that that is the reality for so many elite sports women, and much more in women's sport than, you know, if we were look at our male counterparts. You know, some of them that aren't in the top league at all are getting paid so much more than women in the top league. So yeah, there's just this huge disparity still. Sorry you went through that, but you obviously still, you know, succeeded so much in sport, which is a credit to you. I wondered about like understanding your body and like the impact of your hormones and like your cycle. Was that something that was challenging for you as an elite athlete? We talk about it a lot in running and in individual sports where quite often there's a huge amount of pressure to look a certain way in terms of like running. The leaner you are, you know, the better you are. That's the whole thing we were brought up with. Like, I wondered what it was like for you in those team sports, and if your coach has ever spoke to you about your cycle or how you sort of integrated that in your training as an elite athlete.
Yeah, I didn't get a lot of education similar to you guys for like years and years about the impact of that on training and performance. Just what you were touching on about that leaner piece, a story for me that like really heavily impacted me was I was at basketball training one day and we used to wear reversible singlets. Like, you know, you could like just switch them over so you could like play 3v3 or whatever it was. And I flipped my shirt one day and my coach like walked over to me and he was like, Have you been eating a lot of dessert lately? I just can actually see you've got an extra part of your belly that shouldn't be there. And I don't even know what I responded back to that. Like, I don't even know what I would have said. And he's like, you should probably, like, at most, probably just, like, have an apple for dessert if you want to be having something like that. Like, and it, like, it literally has rocked me for years. And I know, Liz, on the podcast, you shared a couple of your stories in that space. Like, the impact that that has on you for pretty much your entire life as an athlete, but just as a person in general, is just, like, horrendous. So yeah, there was definitely some negative body image experiences in that space. And then just coming back to the menstrual cycle piece, we've now had some really positive progress, I'd say, with AFLW, with Giants in particular. And so what they do at the start of every season is they do like a menstrual health screening, where we've got an amazing women's health and sports physio. She's an awesome combination, because I think a lot of time you can have a women's health physio or a sports physio, but she's both, which is amazing. And so she gets us all to do the screening tool to kind of see if there are any red flags that might be coming up. And you then, if you flag for something, then you have a one-on-one meeting with her. She might do an assessment with you around, like, pelvic floor and different things, and then she refers on to the right person if you need to. So I've gone through a bit of a journey trying to work out if I might have endometriosis, because I've struggled with painful periods for years now, and it's something I'm still trying to work out what the hell is going on there, which is never a fun journey. So I think it's really shifted, but that's only been over the last few years. And I actually don't know what that translation looks like across different leagues and even clubs within the AFLW. So I think it's definitely improved, I know, in my environment, but I'm actually not 100% sure how much progress has been made in that space across the board.
I'm just trying to digest everything you just said. Because
sorry, I just threw a lot at you. Sorry.
No, I just cannot. I mean, I know Esther and I have had our own experiences that have been, like, traumatic, and we know how common those experiences are, but it still doesn't bypass me when I hear what a particular person has gone through. And, like, that small instance of that coach saying that to you, that coach would have never even thought about that sentence ever again in their lives, you know? And, like, it like wells me up to think about, like, the impact of those words on you and how that would have made you feel about your own body, and then what decisions you would have made off the back of that one comment of what that coach said to you for the rest of your life. Like, it's just, it really infuriates me that stuff unfortunately still happens as well. But the menstrual cycle conversation and the education around female physiology, I believe, is actually changing the way people perceive female bodies, and not thinking you have to look a certain way instead of, like, having to weigh a certain weight or have a certain six pack or whatever it might be. Six pack, that's in quotation marks. It's, have you got a regular cycle? Are you a few days late? Are you looking after yourself? Like, if we can replace those conversations with these really healthy conversations about actually using your period as a vital sign to know that you're looking after yourself to then get your performances that you're after, is just so much more important and, like, so much more relevant. And hopefully over time we can kind of see the initial conversation of what used to happen in sport for female athletes kind of get washed out by these really positive ones around female bodies.
Yeah, we just did a content series recently, and Emma Jeffcoat, who's an Australian Olympic triathlete, and one of the questions, we kind of did it where people could submit questions like on a question box on Instagram stories, and one of the questions was something like, do you have bad training days leading up to your period? And she, like, really flipped it on, like, yes, she absolutely does. But for her, she loves knowing that when she's getting her period, that means that she's fueling her body and that she's in a healthy position and her training loads are right. And I think that's obviously it's important to acknowledge what some of the symptoms can be and how you need to adjust your training around that. And I know that's a huge part of what you do. But I love, like, what you touched on there, that it actually is a really healthy thing to have your period, and using that as a touch point, I think, is really powerful as well.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually did a speed session this morning. I was telling Esther, and it was like, I've got a race in about 12 days, and it was the worst speed session I've done in so long. But I'm, like, kind of stoked about that, because I know if I get this bad speed session out of my way now, it means my hormones are maybe challenging me more at the moment. And in 10 days or 12 days, I'm going to feel way better. So you just have to like lean into it, you know, and like really flip the narrative of keeping it positive and getting confidence from no matter what training session you're doing and no matter how you're feeling, there is going to be something that is good that comes out of it. So
love that.
Yeah, keeping it positive. So let's talk about the Female Athlete Project. Do you want to talk us through what the Female Athlete Project is and why did you start it? Was there like a particular moment or experience that made you stop and think, damn, we need to like make some change here in the media space?
Yeah, for sure. I think there were probably multiple points in time where I just felt my frustration building around the lack of media coverage. And just multiple different experiences I've had as a female athlete and so many of us have had that are very paralleled. I think back in 2017, when I was still at Rugby Sevens, I was asked to be an ambassador for an amazing organisation called Our Watch. So they work in the domestic violence space here in Australia. And when I was approached to be an ambassador, I didn't know if I was the right person for that role. I just didn't feel like I was probably equipped with the right information to be a spokesperson on an issue that's horribly, really, really prevalent here in Australia. We know the statistics around how many women are killed by current or former partners. The numbers are really, really scary. And they just said to me, just come and do the training. And then from there, you can make a decision about whether you feel comfortable to do it. And so I went to this training day. And the first component of the training day was around domestic violence and what it actually is and what the drivers are. And a lot of the time, when there's a perpetrator, there's discussions around like the use of alcohol and drugs and a history of violence and things like that. But the actual underlying driver of domestic violence is the power imbalance that exists and this belief from these men that women are lesser than. And the second component of the day was around the power of sport in Australian culture and the way that it kind of invades our conversations, that it's in our living room when we watch sport on TV, when people go to the gym or they run or they participate in community sport or they take the kids to the park. Like, it's a huge part of our everyday life and it forms so many of our conversations and beliefs. And I just like, I think from that day really started to understand that I felt like I had a weight of responsibility as an athlete to actually use my profile to create change rather than just being an athlete who kicks a footy around. Not saying that that's not important, it is important, but I really felt that this different level of responsibility, I think. So then I had this like really burning desire about gender equity and I was like, how do I tell everyone that I want to do something about this and I want to create change in this space? And it was during one of the COVID lockdowns in October 2020 and my older brother's in kind of like, well, at the time it was in like sports marketing and my younger brother's a videographer. And so they both were like, just do something, just start. And so we started with a podcast in the garage of mum and dad's house in Mona Vale on the Northern Beaches and started to put podcast content out on social media and kind of thought that's all it was ever going to be, just a podcast where I wanted to create a space to share the stories of incredible female athletes who I believe deserved to be household names but just weren't because they didn't get the mainstream media coverage. But then we started to kind of experiment with different bits of content because I personally felt really frustrated. Like, I went like scrolling through so many different podcasts to try and find like women's sports news. And this was in 2020, which is not that long ago, right? Like, I just wanted one place to get my women's sports news and I couldn't find it anywhere. And similar on social media back then, I wanted to be like, okay, what's happened over the weekend in women's sport? Like, how do I find out what's gone on here? And again, I couldn't really find it in one place. And so we started to experiment with different bits of content around like, here's the top five things that happened in women's sport over the weekend. And it started to get really good engagement. And we started to realize like, people want to know this information. There's a real demand for it and people don't have a place to find it. And so over time, we've just now grown this community of over 300,000 followers across our different channels. We've done merchandise. We've done a whole range of different campaigns to back different causes that are really, really important to us. It's just like been the most insane journey to see the way that this community has grown and just to see that like people genuinely love and care about women in sport and want more content about women in sport.
Oh, that's such a cool story. So inspiring. Like, yeah, everything you went through led to that moment where you realized, like, yeah, people do want to know about this. It's not on the news. Also, who watches the news anymore? But it's also, it's not there, right? Like, it's still male dominated, all about, you know, the men's sport over the weekend. And people want, like, quick information. And yeah, you just absolutely nailed it. And that's off the back of, like, your experience as well as an athlete, not getting the support and coverage that you deserved, and then taking that experience and creating something so incredible. Like, yeah, it's really inspiring, and you've done such an amazing job. And I think it just shows how much people want to hear this information by the engagement, like you say, and like the followers and the interest in what you're doing. So yeah, absolutely inspired over here at Femi. We love what you're doing.
Thank you. Thanks.
It's really incredible. But you mentioned before around, you know, the power of sport and how incredible that is in keeping people well and safe. And we know that, you know, 50% of women are dropping out of sport at the age of 17, and it is a lot higher than males in sport. How have women responded to the Female Athlete Project? Like, do you have any standout stories of women who, I don't know, have come back into sport or have found love again, or just love staying up to date? Like, do you have any stories from that journey so far?
Yeah, I love, like, when we get DMs from random people who've followed us for ages. And like, we got one just the other day from this woman who said that she finally built up the courage after like seeing so much of our content of these amazing women and different athletes like performing at the elite level, but also at grassroots level. She finally found the confidence to go and play like club touch footy again after so many years out of the game. And like, that's literally just one person with their story in like their little bubble. And I think that's the best stuff, you know. Like, I think what a lot of the work that we do is about the visibility of elite athletes at that top level. Like, we do share some grassroots and community stories, but I think what we hope is that by sharing the stories of those elite athletes and sharing what their struggles have been throughout that process as well, I think it's a really empowering thing where an elite athlete might talk about the barriers that they've had in accessing sport or uncomfortable uniforms or a negative experience with a coach or something like that. And people who might participate in grassroots sport could have the exact same experience at their community club. And I think that's been a really empowering thing for people to feel like they actually have a place for their story to be told, even if it isn't their own personal story, and they feel like their voice is heard. And like, we get a lot of messages from people asking us to help kind of advocate for their community club for something that's gone wrong. And we will do our best that we can. Sometimes we probably aren't the right people to be able to help in that situation. But I think it's like trying to be a place for people to feel like, I think a lot of the time when you have negative experiences, you often feel really isolated and like, where on earth am I meant to go for this? And so I think it's been really cool to build this community of people that really just like uplift one another.
Totally. It's like the confidence piece, eh? Like feeling confident that you can go and take up a new sport or set some really big goals and chase them or push back when things don't feel right and feel like you're not alone in doing that. I think that's what you do so well, and you've given so much confidence over to so many other women to go and do that in their own worlds. And I hope you realize the impact that you're having, because I feel like a lot of the time you kind of don't, where you kind of forget the like really like widespread influence that you can have even by just like one post or one comment or one message you send to someone. But it's so powerful. You could literally change somebody's life. Like, someone might see a story that feels like one they can relate to on the Female Athlete Project and go and make a decision that will change their path forever. And that's just freaking cool. Like, so epic. But you've obviously got this huge community. You said 300,000 people, and you are constantly sharing stories on your channels, which is incredible. The amount of content you guys churn out is so incredible. I don't know how you do it.
But content is exhausting.
Yeah, it's very impressive. But obviously, in the world particularly of social media, there are quite a few trolls and people who have a lot to say behind the keyboard. How do you kind of manage that yourself? And then also, how can we encourage more women to kind of stand up when they maybe feel like things aren't fair?
Yeah, It's brutal. It's so brutal, the trolls sometimes on social media. And I also should point out, just on your note about the content piece, I do have an amazing team around me. We've probably got about 6 or 7 people, or not all doing content, all in different roles. But it's been really cool to kind of build that team up of people who have awesome skill sets that complement each other to put out that awesome content. The trolling piece, I've tried lots of different things. I've done like the keywords where you can like turn keywords off when people say certain things. I think that works to an extent. People do weird things now though, where they like put asterisks in words to try and avoid that, like ridiculous. But I've tried that. Early days, I would definitely go back at the trolls. I would, if I felt like they were someone I could try and have a somewhat reasonable conversation with, I would try. But I've really shifted that approach because it's not feasible to spend that amount of time going back and forth with people. So I will, if someone posts something that's disrespectful or misogynistic, I will immediately block them and delete the comment, which I've actually found takes so much less energy from me. And it feels, I don't know if empowering is the right word. It feels right in the sense of like, it's a really quick decision to say, I'm actually not going to take that on board. I'm going to immediately do something. I'm literally going to click the button to make sure that that is gone. It's removed. And I think a big part of that decision-making is I don't want particularly young people coming on and reading comments like that. So that's a big thing around actually getting it out so people can't see it, to kind of like perpetrate this like really negative cycle. It's really brutal though. Like sometimes Facebook is it's a real cesspit sometimes. Like we just do posts, and a lot of the time our posts from Instagram just automatically go to Facebook. And like, I don't really go on there that often. And then I'll jump on and check the comment sections and I'm like, oh my goodness. So then turn comments off. We then get DMs from these guys who are like, why the F did you turn these comments off? Like blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh my goodness. So then I have to block them. And it's super time consuming, to be honest. Like, yeah. I need to find a better solution moving forward. I feel like it's so much better than what it was in terms of the way we are handling these things now. But it is the amount of time I spend moderating our comment sections is unrealistic, to be honest. And I need a solution. So if you find one, please let me know.
Well, I'm impressed, and I feel like you're like the mother protecting all your children just by going in there and like deleting comments, because even if it doesn't affect you, I can tell that you're worried it might affect other people, which is so like responsible of you to do. And I'm not going to give this guy too much airtime, but I did want to bring it up because I saw a comment on one of the posts that we collabed on, and it had only probably been up there for like 2 minutes and it got deleted. And thankfully, I screenshotted it because I was just so appalled. And then I kind of sat there and I thought, I imagine this is something that Chloe deals with all the time. And this guy was pretty much comparing women athletes to high school boys and male athletes to national champion All Blacks rugby players. And I was just like shocked that was even like someone's thought process, because I feel like at Femi we don't necessarily get that so much. We don't have a platform as big as yours, and we are very much like woman-specific focus because our product is for women, whereas Female Athlete Project is for everybody to learn more about women athletes. But yeah, I was like, I saw it got deleted and I was like, I wonder if Chloe's team deleted that one because it's so negative for women to read that and feel like, oh, well, if I'm just being compared to like a high school boy in terms of being an elite athlete, what's the point?
It's just like, it is quite scary. And it actually reminds me of the Marty Sheargold issue where he compared the Matildas to year 10 girls, which is obviously a slightly different comparison. But it's just like, I just find that stuff so harmful. And I just wonder, like, behind closed doors, the kind of conversations that those people are having, if they're so comfortable to be posting something like that on a public social media page. I think one of my team must have deleted that one, which is nice that was sorted out quickly, because I think, yeah, it's just, I think where it's dangerous is like what we used to notice is when there would have been a comment like that, suddenly there was like this army of like young boys who would come and like, and like suddenly the likes on comments like that would build, and then they'd all reply to each other, and then they'd like go through our comment section responding to different people with like these really negative responses. we've seen a shift in that space now, and I think we do have to be really proactive in removing the negative comments. But we've seen a shift where if we don't get to something in time, what I've loved is that our community actually now goes to bat for us. So like, I don't actually need to respond to anything anymore, because like people just like come and go to town. And because the community then supports these people who are doing the right thing, the guy who posted the negative comment looks like an idiot with no support. And it's actually, that's been probably my favorite shift. I've actually quite enjoyed that part of the process.
That must be really satisfying, seeing like this army of BYOP project fans being like, no, we're not about this.
I was prepared to go back to this guy and like absolutely roast him and probably do the really immature thing, you know, and then it got deleted. And I was like, you know what?
I would have loved to see you roast him. I would have absolutely got behind you.
Next time. Well, hopefully there isn't a next time, but I guarantee there probably will be.
There will be, sadly.
It reminded me because I follow this amazing athlete from America, Ellie Ostrander, and she did this post about like, I run like a girl, what does that mean? And like all these amazing cool comments were on there, like it means I am really fast, or like I'm like all these really empowering things. And then yeah, I think what you were saying before, where it hits the wrong side of the algorithm, and then there was just troll after troll, and they were like trolling my comment because I said this funny little comment, and then they were like, what do you mean? You're slow. And then everyone else was like, yeah, you're slow. And they were like, I was just laughing. I was like, but then I saw the absolute amount of comments that were coming at her, and I was like, shit, this is actually pretty scary. So yeah, I understand, and I can imagine like deleting them quickly means you don't attract those type of people, which is, yeah, you don't want that at all.
Yeah, and then the funny part actually just on that is like, if you delete it and it's a post that kind of starts to go viral, if you, even though it is really time consuming, if you can keep up with deleting the trolls, they've come to our comment section and been like, where are the negative comments here? Like they come hunting for the comments in there so that they can support it. And then they literally scroll through and can't find anything. And I want to be like, sucked in.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not there anymore. I love that. Satisfying. It's a nice win. In terms of like, you know, all your supporters and then other people out there who want to get behind women's sport, want to see it continue to grow, get more support, more funding, more coverage, all of it, like what can we all do better to help the future of women's sport?
Yeah, we talk about this a lot. I actually responded to, there was a woman who did a cool comment on one of our posts, I think just last night, and she was like, I'm not a multinational, everyone always talks about investing in women's sport, like I would love to, like can someone make an ETF so that I can invest in women's sport, but like I can't do it as an individual. And I responded, I was like, I would really like to make an ETF so that people can invest in women's sport that way. But for us, like we talk about it all the time, that it's, you can do a lot as an individual, like either paid or for free, to be honest. Like when we talk about free, like you literally can watch women's sport on free to air television, and that makes a big difference because broadcast deals are some of the most lucrative deals that happen in sport, and that makes decisions around funding and minimum salaries and things like that for the athletes. Following athletes on social media and engaging with their content. So I love this idea of like, if you see a fellow athlete who's like potentially doing like a sponsored post or something, if you obviously agree and believe in the product, actually engaging with it, leaving a comment, because then when they go back to the brand with the stats that they have in terms of engagement levels, and it's a positive thing, they're more likely to get longer term brand deals and have more money coming in for them. And that's literally something you can do completely for free. Paid options are just things like buying a membership to support your favorite team, buying merchandise, buying a ticket to go and watch a game. Like there's really simple things like that. And I think it's really important to note as well that it's not the responsibility of individual people who are fans to shift the dial on the level of investment in women's sport. But I think when people do ask that question, I think, again, if we come back to this collective idea of a rising tide, we have the ability to create change in that space by just like taking a really small step as an individual to support women in sport.
Yeah, agree. There's so many things that you can be doing, whether you've got money or not. Hey, and I think what's so awesome about social media, the positives of social media, is that these athletes now have access to tell their own stories and create their own brands and create their own awareness. And that is starting to come back round with brand deals and more money and more funding, which allows them to focus more on their sport, get even better at their sport, and increase their performance. So it definitely helps no matter like what you can do, just every little bit does count. I'm actually going to Portland next week, week after next, and there is a women's sports bar in Portland called Sports Bar.
Yes. Yeah. Are you going? I'm so jealous.
Yeah,
I'm no, really I want to go there. Oh my gosh. Can you send photos?
Yeah, no, I'm so excited to like go and be amongst women's sports in a really like wholesome place that is just all about celebrating women. So that's going to be...
Oh, have the best time.
Thanks.
How good.
In terms of the future of the Female Athlete Project, for you, like what is next? Do you have kind of a big dream, a dream guest, or any cool, exciting projects on the horizon?
Yes, dream guest. My two that I would die, Kathy Freeman, obviously, and Ash Barty. They're kind of two Aussie icons that I would just absolutely love to have on the podcast. Getting Ilona Maher on the podcast last week, week before, was like insane. So her episode's coming out shortly. Like to get access to someone like her is absolutely ridiculous. She we reached out to her a month or so before knowing she was going to be here in Australia in Canberra to play that game against the Wallaroos. Reached out, my producer Soph reached out to her. We didn't hear anything, and then on the Monday she sent us a DM. She was like, hey, if you can get to Canberra by the Wednesday, come down and do the pod. And we were like, yes, we are making it happen. See you there. So getting that opportunity was huge. In terms of what's next for the Female Athlete Project, I often find this question quite hard because I feel like we're in a position that we could go in so many different directions. But I think for us, where we're going is trying to do more in the live event space, which is why it was really cool doing that with you guys on International Women's Day. We're doing summits for athletes where we're getting female athletes from a whole range of different sports and bringing them in for a day that's all about increasing their commercial skill set and opportunities for them, like getting a professional headshot done and learning like how to optimize like the content you're posting on Instagram, learning how to build a website for yourself so that when someone Googles you, you get to control what your bio is and what's available compared to Wikipedia that might just have random facts in there that someone could have just gone in and edited. So kind of trying to empower athletes in that way. But yeah, in the live event space, trying to connect more. Like we've built this amazing online community, but it's really cool to have the opportunity to connect more in real life with those people as well. And I think another thing we've really loved doing more of this year in particular has been more video content of storytelling. Like I love the podcast. I think it's such a beautiful way to sit down with someone and really get to know them. But I think we've done a few different things with some brands around the video storytelling piece, which I think is just a really nice way to for people to get to know someone and their story and what they actually look like when they're competing, so that when they're competing again, someone can watch them, engage with them and support them as well.
Epic. Wow, the future is very bright for the Female Athlete Project. And I would like to say you were one of our dream guests. So the fact that you're here with us today is really exciting. So thank you.
Oh, that's really lovely.
I just want to finish off with some pretty impressive stats that actually the Female Athlete Project posted last night, which is over the last 5 years, I think it has been, women's sport have seen 275% increase in sports media, 300% revenue increase in women's sport since 2022. And this year alone, there has been $2.35 billion generated in revenue from women's sport. So that is freaking epic. And the Female Athlete Project has played a piece in that and bringing those stats to life. So congratulations. And how do you feel like knowing that there has been such a rise over the last 5 years and you have been very much at the forefront of that change?
Yeah, thank you. I think I feel like we're a very, very small fish in that pond, but I think it's been really cool, I guess, to see this shift. And I'm obsessed with data. Like I love numbers like that. And we post pieces of content like that relatively frequently because it's kind of this idea of you cannot argue with data. Someone can't troll and come along. Well, they still try, to be honest, to come along and say, well, that's not real. Well, it's data. It's statistics. It's facts. Like you can't tell me it's wrong. So I love having that stuff. But what I've loved is this shift from women's sport being seen as a charity, as being seen as like a good cause to get behind because it's the right thing to do. I think this shift to where women's sport generates billions of dollars now in revenue, and if you invest in women's sport, you are going to get a great return on your investment. There's this amazing data out of a place in Australia called True North Research, and they look at the fact that brands that sponsor female athletes and women's sports teams actually get a better return on investment because of the trust and respect and engagement that fans have with those teams. So because they feel that positive way towards the teams and the players, that then translates to feel positively about that brand. And I just love that piece. I talk about that research all the time. I love it because I think it's a really cool way to show that, like, it's not doing the right thing. Like, you will get money from investing in women in sport. So get behind it and support it.
Oh my gosh, yes. You know, we speak to investors all the time and we get a similar feeling of like, pat on the back, good job. It feels like a bit of a charity, but like, we're not willing to invest. And I like to say the safest investment you can make right now is into women's sports and women's sports technology, because it is not going anywhere. It is on the rise. It's definitely never going to go back. We have to kind of show the world that if you're going to want to make money, put your money into the places that are going to make you the money, which is women's sport and women athletes. So we love that. Well, Chloe, thank you so much for your time today. We've absolutely loved chatting with you. I know our community are going to be so hyped to listen to this episode. So thank you so much. We'll pop Chloe's Instagram, the Female Athlete Project Instagram, into the show notes. We'll also make sure that there's a link for the merch so you can go and shop all the merch there as well. But if you want to get in touch with us, you can get at us on Instagram at femi.co as well. But in the meantime, thank you so much, Chloe. We can't wait to see you again soon.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real honor to come on and chat to you both today. I've really, really enjoyed it. So thank you so much.
Thank you.